Now comes the classic from Kate Camp. It is a camp classic. It is Valley of the Dolls by Jacqueline Suzanne. And Kate is the only person in the world who hasn't hitherto read it. Are you serious?
Well, yeah, apparently it was selling 100,000 copies a day when gazillions. It first came out.
Absolutely so, gazillions.
But I think, I mean, that was before I was born, Cam, of course.
Well, all right. But, rub my nose in it.
But I'd heard of it. I think I'd probably just heard the name of it, and maybe it was more the film that I had in mind, but I'd never really thought about it. Or in my head, it was just some sort of 1960s, druggy, sort of Stepford Wives, but in a decadent way kind of book.
To be quite frank, I don't think I've read it either. But it's one of those books that's in the atmosphere, yeah. So you kind of by osmosis think you might have read it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went to an exhibition in Melbourne earlier this year about the 1960s, and it was there for sale in the shop. So I thought, oh, interesting, I'll buy that.
This is the 50th anniversary version, right?
Yeah, and it's a Virago Classics version, and introduction by Julie Birchall, which, you know, gives it a little bit of extra feminist and hip sort of oomph. But, yeah, I mean, it is. I think we can say categorically extremely trashy. It's so workmanlike to say it's quite a struggle to read in terms of its prose, but it's fascinating as a kind of time capsule.
Yeah. I mean, its credentials as a feminist book are fairly lightly written, I would have thought.
Well,
it's hard to say, right? Yeah. You cannot tell whether it's saying this is the way things are.
Yeah.
Or this is the way things are, and damn it, they need to change.
Yeah, and I don't think that, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of one of those books that maybe the author doesn't have to have necessarily feminist intent or feminist credentials to make a book interesting from a feminist perspective and to make it a feminist landmark. And I think that's what it is. One of the things that surprised me about it is it's set, it opens in 1945 and it ends in mid-60s. So it's actually not set in the era that it was written. And so in some ways it's kind of a bit of a, it's a little bit mind-bending, because some of the things that are happening in it, you think, is this, am I shocked about this as if it was happening in the 1960s? Am I shocked about it as if it was happening in the 1940s or 50s? Or is it still actually quite outlandish even by current standards? And I mean, I think it's one of the things, maybe it's not a feminist book, but boy, is it a woman's book. And I mean, the kind of things that happen in it, and I mean, it's got such an exhausting amount of plot, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Is there a man in it who emerges... Henry. Henry's all right.
Henry's all right. He's kind of a father figure, all right,
let's
and a
not,
sort of chum.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. All right? Because we're not going to pull our punches. We're going to tell
you
what
God,
happened.
No.
Okay. It's got no claim to literary excellence whatsoever. It was pretty badly reviewed at the time, but it became a runaway commercial success. The best-selling novel, as you said, Katie, in the publishing history. A pop culture classic. Three women.
Yeah.
Anne, who is
all gorgeous.
Yeah, they are all gorgeous.
Anne, who's gorgeous and becomes a makeup model, kind of a Revlon girl or whatever. She's a sort of uptight New Englander, and she's sort of the heart and the central character. And then Neely, who she meets, who's coming out of vaudeville. I mean, that's one of the things that gives it the weird sort of historical context, is it's crossing over a lot of different eras. So Neely's coming out of vaudeville, and I mean, is she sort of a thinly disguised Judy Garland?
Well, I don't know. Judy Garland apparently went for the Helen Lawson role
in the movie
when the movie was being made,
but I feel like,
and she did a Neely thing and allegedly refused to come out of a Winnebago and finally was fired.
I mean, I've just seen the movie Judy recently. I didn't know much about Garland's
I wondered
life.
Whether that was why you chosen this book.
It wasn't, but that was interesting. So I think that, anyway, Neely's sort of she starts out as this plucky vaudeville star, and she's the one of the three women who's really got some talent, and she's a really talented singer. And then there's Jennifer North, who's played by Sharon Tate in the film, who's just a gorgeous blonde with big boobs who ends up doing sort of nudie movies in France.
So reading it, I assume she was a kind of a Marilyn Monroe figure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And there's that sort of, you know, Romana Clay element to it. Well, I don't have the clay because I don't know who the blimmin' people are to fit into the lock.
So, well, Ethel Merman is supposed to be the sort of Helen Lawson thing.
Yeah, but I don't think you don't need to know those. I mean, you know, it's not a book about characterisation. You've got the three women. She takes 100 pages to set them up, a good chunk on each one, and then after that it just intersperses between the stories of the three of them. And quite often I would find myself getting confused about who was who and who the male bit characters were, and I don't think any of that really matters, because what you're reading it for, as the reader it was designed for, I think, is just the absolutely rollercoaster twists and turns of incredible sensibility sensationalist plot and an incredible frankness about sex, and not just sex, but other aspects of life. But yeah, an incredible frankness. And I can just imagine it being the kind of book where, you know, you hand it on to your friends with dog-eared corners and saying, I'll read this page, read that page. You know, you can skip the first 100 pages if you're only into it for the sex and the pills.
I don't know about frankness, Kate. I mean, frankness to me means real, and the sex is not real.
No, it's not. Exactly.
Excuse me.
Yeah, frankness. Well, I'm going to read a scene to demonstrate what I mean by frankness. Right. It is kind of a gauche mad frankness. But and I mean, there were laugh out loud moments, not intentionally throughout. But so Anne is being rung by her friend, now I'm going to struggle to remember which one it is, by Jennifer. Hello, Anne. A telegram just came for you. Sure, 1 second. She ripped it open. Tony gently but firmly pushed her on the bed. She held the telegram and the phone and silently tried to push him off. She clamped her hand over the phone. No, Tony, not now, no. He was on top of her. She looked at the wire. Tony's mouth found her breasts. Oh, God. Anne? Yes, I'm here. Anne? Good Lord, your mother is dead. She felt Tony enter her, roughly, pounding into her. She clenched her teeth and kept her voice even. Yes, Anne, that's all it says. I'm terribly sorry. She hung up. Tony had fallen across her, panting and satisfied exhaustion.
I'm so glad you chose that. Because I was reading that scene and I wrote down, insane.
It's insane.
Where she tries to get Tony to marry her by withholding, but has to read the telegram about the mother dying and, oops, too late.
It's absolutely mad. That was just such a crack up. And so, but it also... It also demonstrates, if you give it the credit of deconstructing it, it demonstrates one of the things about the book, which is the female friendships are more important than the sex. And so, you know, throughout the only real sense you get of meaning out of the book is how much these women are there for each other and support each other.
I'm not sure that's even true. Neely is a traitorous thing.
That's true, but you know... God, and this is a bad sign when you can't remember who's who. But Anne, you know, Anne has all that money that she's made early
she's
on.
She's very, very well off.
But
she's still hanging out for the man she loves.
Yeah, but she pays for Neely to go into rehab and into the psych ward, which is kind of like a sub.
Yeah, but Anne is some kind of saint.
Not a good thing. I guess she is.
Isn't she?
But anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is the most important, the moving parts of what is an extremely mechanical book are all the women. They are the cogs whose stories interrelate and keep everything moving along, and the men are just these kind of, you know, they're just little bits that come in and out. One thing I hadn't realised was that the dolls were the pills, and interestingly, when I looked for the first mention of the pills, you don't actually get a pill mentioned until almost halfway through the book.
Was that second L?
Yeah, but then they start to really get into them, and I guess that was the thing, having seen Judy as well and realising how much the pills, you know, the trailer I got Richard
keeping
put
them
up
thin
the,
was yeah, the main reason.
I was going to say, I got Richard to put up the trailer of the film on the RNZ website, because it's really interesting the way the pills are pitched there as some kind of hedonistic sex aid, but in fact the pills are all about sleeping and losing weight, and that very much came through in Judy, about Judy Garland as well, and how there's this misogynistic system that's there to keep them thin, you know, and it doesn't matter what they do, they go in, you know, she goes in for the sleep cure where she sleeps for 8 days and doesn't eat, because, you know, what an effective
way to
shed
some
pounds.
I want that sleep cure.
But yeah, I mean,
I don't care about the weight, just go to sleep for 8 days.
Have 8 days of sleep. Huh. But yeah, so the pills are all about, you know, they're not really about, it's not recreational drug use in that sense. It's more kind of the mother's little helper getting them through their crazy lifestyle. But I mean, I made a little list at one point of the things that happened in no particular order, you know. She falls in love with the singer who turns out to have had a mental age of 12 throughout and is being controlled by the sister. One receives a giant diamond from her secret billionaire boyfriend who she didn't know was a billionaire. And then there's a flashback to a lesbian love affair at a Swiss finishing school with a Spanish woman. There's starring nude in art films. There's suicide attempts, actual suicides. There's abortions galore. I mean, just absolutely
scattered
with
abortions.
Jennifer
says at one point she had 7.
Yeah. And you see one. And I mean, I read in one of the reviews saying, oh, Jackie Collins and other sort of trashy bonkbuster novelists were a lot more frank about abortions. But they're writing 20 years later. I feel that for 1966, the account of the abortion, you know, she found the doctor by herself, a nice antiseptic-looking man in New Jersey. There was a clean operating table and an efficient nurse. It cost $1,000. The nurse jabbed her arm with a needle, sodium pentothal it was called, and it was a greater sensation than even Secanol's. When she woke, it was over. 2 weeks later, it was as if it had never happened. Her waistline returned to normal. That's it. That's 100% of the trauma she suffers from the abortion. I think that's pretty radical, even in a probably a contemporary context, let alone in the sort of genre thing of its day. So abortions galore. You know, then there's one that goes in. She goes in for operation of polyps on the uterus, and then she discovers she has breast cancer and she's going to have a mastectomy. There's the, you know, the gay costume designer husband who's sleeping with boys and girls. There's, she secretly
but only
buys
because
a,
she drove them
oh,
to
she
it.
Drove them to it. There's the secret that she secretly buys a company to give to her to keep her, you know, Dean Martin-esque sort of lover.
That's the 12-year-old mental age.
It just, the whole thing is just...
You got the Dean Martin-esque... Dean Martin didn't have a mental age at 12,
I was meaning the other one, Lion Burke.
Oh, yeah. You think he's Dean
Martin? Well, no, I just think that's how I picture him looking physically in my head. But, I mean, I don't know. The thing is, I don't know any of the stars of this era, so I can't.
I had high hopes for Lion Burke, but he turned out to be an idiot.
I expected him to come through in the end, especially when he was a writer. They are.
Seb Henry.
They're absolutely useless. No. And even he's only good because he invests too money in AT&T shares. I mean, that's another interesting thing about it, is the money. It's kind of, are you watching Succession? Have you watched Succession? I haven't seen it all, so no spoilers.
No, me neither.
But it's similar, it has in some ways a similar thing going on to this, which is that it's both voyeuristically lifestyles of the rich and famous, but you come out of it thinking, thank God I don't have that much money.
Yeah.
Because they're all so unhappy and you know, their lives are just difficult and sort of meaningless. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I made another note of a scene when we're going back to the frankness of the sex. You know, she says it's a weird combination of sort of a naivety and a complete unrealisticness and then a frankness. So very early on, Neely says, you know, Anne, we did it. Did what? You know. Neely, you mean, uh-huh, it hurt a lot and I didn't come. But Mel made me come the other way. What are you talking about? He went down on me. And it's like, I feel pretty confident it's probably the first time the phrase "he went down on me" appeared in a New York Times bestseller. But then there's this sort of naivety of like, we did it. Like they're kind of little schoolgirls in a high school musical.
It's told in a monotone.
Yeah.
Right? There is no alteration of tone.
No.
To whether you're having a cup of tea or... mad anal sex.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's like what someone who's never read a book imagines that a book is like. You know?
That's not bad. Yeah.
But there were times, you know, there's great versions of this book. You know, there's The Group by Mary McCarthy. There's, you know, The Bell Jar. There's wonderful books set around this time that have so much more to tell you about the human condition and women and things. But I don't know, I ended up kind of having a grudging affection for it in the end, because she just seemed, and I knew as well when I read, you know, she'd been diagnosed, the author Jacqueline Suzanne had been diagnosed with breast cancer, and she thought, right, I better crack on and do something with my life to make sure that I make my mark and that I become famous. And her last words apparently to her husband were, hey doll, let's get out of here. And I like her. I like the author much more than I like any of the characters.
As she said famously, the 1960s will be remembered for Andy Warhol, the Beatles and me.
Yeah, maybe a bit of an overreach, but
not me, her.
No, yeah.
I don't know. Is it worth reading today, Kate?
No, but definitely go onto YouTube and watch the trailer for the movie, which is just laugh out loud mad.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bad it's good, yep. I think, is the word not only for the book but also for the movie. It's so bad it's good. And also, I mean, I think given the Judy Garland movie, it's probably worth reading this for a bit of insight into the kind of world she was living in. Because this can't be... exaggerated, yes, but it's somebody suggests it's the female version of Mad Men, actually.
Yeah, yep. I think it's got a Mad Men vibe, but maybe not quite as good a quality narrative shaping.
No, slightly madder than Mad Men. Thank you, Kate Camp.